Welcome in. This is the Character Concerns Podcast. My name is Chris Onocero, joined as always by my guy, Jay Binkley. And Bink, we are down to two teams left in the college football playoff. Saw a couple games this past weekend here, and me and you were actually on the air during the Indiana-Oregon game, which was an ass-whooping. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But
now Oregon has Dylan Raiola to take the...
Yeah, we'll get to that. But we want to start with Chiefs talk, and season's done, playoffs have started in the NFL. We just finished we're still actually in super. They call it Super Wild Card Weekend. It's Wild Card Weekend. There's a Monday night game tonight. We've got Texans and Steelers in Pittsburgh. So I'm looking forward to that as soon as I get home.
Steelers are 23-0 on Monday Night Football, if you want to count this, but it is on Monday Night Football.
So the question now, the Chiefs are currently like looking over their staff and making some changes. Matt Nagy, no longer under contract with the team. He's been interviewing for multiple head coaching positions. The belief, according to Nate Taylor, is that no more Matt Nagy. He will be out of a job. And so now, you know, either he takes a job elsewhere as an offensive coordinator and calls plays, or he becomes a head coach somewhere. A lot of people think he can make the jump to Tennessee and coach under Mike Borgonzi there, who was the assistant general manager here in Kansas City until right before the 25 season. So the question now becomes, and this is debate all over 96.5 The Fan, debate all over the internet here. Who should the Chiefs target at offensive coordinator? If you were putting together a list, like who would be your favorite or favorites to get that job for offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs?
I mean, you know, historically, like I said, I've always liked Cliff Kingsbury a little bit. He intrigues me. If the desire is just stay offense, you know, not have these visions to be a head coach, but...
I believe he has interviewed for multiple head coaching jobs.
And it's the thing, I get this point, like North Turner, yeah, he did okay as a head coach, but he's an offensive coordinator.
Did he do okay as a head coach? He wasn't great as a head coach.
They had a good playoff run with him.
They had like one good playoff run with him.
There was one year, and it was a good playoff run, but he's a good offensive coordinator.
I mean, he was one of the best in the 2000s.
Yeah, or a Dom Capers type. But the problem is I always kind of wanted that guy that wants the next level, that wants the horizon. I think I brought it up last week about Hayden Fry and how he always hired assistants to say, I'm going to hire you because I think you'll be a head coach someday. And you know what? Guys like Dan Mullen, guys like Barry Alvarez, guys like Bill Snyder and Bob Stoops all coached under him. And they went on and not only went to programs, but turned around programs when they went elsewhere. So it's got to be somebody that – has to have a little bit of Alex Smith in him. And what I mean by that is willing to kind of check that ego, you know, to the side, you know, relenting that, hey, this guy was drafted to take my job. Being an offensive coordinator with Andy Reid, you know that, you know, you're not the top dog with that offense. And you're sitting there with Andy Reid. He's going to have his say. And you know what? Patrick Mahomes is going to have his say. So it's got to be kind of an offensive coordinator. Now, if it's an offensive coordinator who's just dealing with the quarterback, it's much different. When you get the head coach and, you know, his ideology, it's tough. It is tough to get like an established, you know, offensive coordinator. It's tough. I'll be honest with you. I like the kid. And it's not just because he's from Kansas City or whatever. Nathan Schoellhouse. I mean, this guy's got three coaches interviews. He's the passing game coordinator. More and more teams are looking for not necessarily that coordinator, but somebody on that, you know, offensive staff. And Andy Reid was never a coordinator before hired as head coach. John Harbaugh, never the coordinator.
He was a coordinator. He was special teams coordinator. But he was a coordinator.
Yeah. But just special teams, okay. But as far as he wasn't an offensive or defensive coordinator, is kind
right,
of what I'm
right.
What
which I'm which is why a lot of people thought it was a questionable hire when he did go to Baltimore because he was special
and
teams
the same
coordinator.
With Andy. Yeah. And the same with Andy.
Yeah, because he was quarterback's coach.
When he was hired. But, you know, guys like that, but coming off, and who you with? You're with Sean McVay. Are you soaking that information in? Are you hungry? Are you young and hungry? And I think he would be, but are you okay being and listening to Andy Reid? Or are you okay to come in here and be that offensive coordinator with a guy like Andy Reid and kind of take that knowledge with you and Patrick Mahomes? That would be my ideal fit. Or definitely I would look at the college level as well, because that's kind of where things are going with some of the innovation we have at the college level. I mean, Bieniemy and all that, listen, he did a fine job in Kansas City. Once he left Kansas City, he hasn't been good for Eric, except he found a nice home with Ben in Chicago there as a running backs coach. But I just bang my head on it because I, as much as I've liked guys in the past, I don't want guys in the past. You know, I don't want Doug Peterson. I don't want Matt Nagy. I don't want Mike Kafka. Don't want Eric Bieniemy. I want different guys, players as well, players, coaches, you name it. So it's a tough call. Would I take a Stefanski or somebody like that? Yeah. Or Mike McDaniel? Yeah. But are they willing to do it? Are they willing to, you know, kind of relent that power? That's why sometimes I think you have to look at the Nathan Shielhouse types, that even though he's getting head coaching interviews, you know, to step in, work with Andy Reid and go forward. How about you?
I want to see more from Shielhouse before I put him in that position. Because he's a passing game coordinator.
Yeah, you're turning over the keys to him, but Andy Reid's still here. So that's right.
Here's the thing that I do want to say. Whoever becomes the offensive coordinator is not going to call plays.
Nope.
Nobody has called plays as the Chiefs offensive coordinator since 2017.
They have maybe for a game or two during the season. Randy lets them.
Yeah, it's they haven't done it since 2017 because ever since Patrick Mahomes has become the starter, Andy's finally got his dream quarterback, and he's having so much fun calling the plays that he wants to, that it's going to be hard to get him to relinquish those duties. So I definitely think that whoever you are bringing in has to be willing to not call the plays. Has to be okay with that. That is not. I don't think that's a negotiable part of the job. You will not call plays if you're the offensive coordinator.
You know, kind of tough.
So that's why I think like Kingsbury's not realistic. I don't think Mike McDaniel's realistic. A lot of those like former head coaches, I don't think those are realistic.
It would have to be. I'm not necessarily saying Shielhouse, but somebody like that.
No, I know what you mean.
It's working for a guy that you respect. You know, in Sean McVay. Yeah.
My issue with Shielhouse is that I don't think the issue with the Chiefs is, hey, we need to completely revamp our passing game per se. I trust Andy to do that part. The Chiefs need a running game guy. Bad.
Run game coordinator. Real bad. Obviously, I understand that's where the Bieniemy.
Real bad. And not even just that, like, if they wanted to bring in Mike McDaniel as the OC, and Mike McDaniel was the one that was calling, that was formulating the game plan for the run game, because that's what he did when he was in San Francisco.
I'd be for it, but he's willing to check.
He's
that
not
going to
do it. Yeah. He's not going to do it. Yeah. But like that would be my dream scenario.
Which Stefanski would be great because he was a Vikings offensive coordinator for a long time. But is he willing to step back? Because I think
because he's getting head coaching.
There's 25% of the league is open. Yeah. And they're starting to run out of.
And Stefanski's probably going to get a head coaching job.
Of course he is,
because he's very highly thought of as a play caller.
And LaFleur too, if the Packers say, "Hey, we're just going to move on."
Well, they're talking about extension.
I saw that.
My thing is, I want a more run oriented offensive coordinator because I need somebody that's going to pound the table. Hey, Andy, we need to run the damn football.
You already got your basic pass game coordinator in Rhymes.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like him and Andy, like they are the passing game guys. I trust Andy for the passing game. I trust that he's going to be able to make the changes he needs to that system.
Here's the one thing, too, is Reed, I believe, understands it.
Oh, Reed knows.
I mean, he had the league's leading rusher in 2017.
Yeah.
He knows. It's just the willingness to do it.
And not only just what they saw in 2016, but even when they had Jamal Charles.
Well, just remember, even if we bring in a run-heavy dude, It's still got to pass Big Red for the call going into the quarterback.
Yeah,
so that's the tough part about it. You know what I mean?
And so like that's the reason why you want somebody that knows how to talk to Andy, knows how to work with him and convince him to do the things that he needs
to do. Which EB did, full credit.
And that's the reason why for me, understanding like in a dream scenario, if you could just hire someone and they call plays, Mike McDaniel would be the guy I would want. Because of how good his run game was in Miami and how good it was when he was in San Francisco before that. Because to me, I think run game, like you need to pivot more to the run game because that's kind of the meta in today's game now. If you go watch those playoff games, man, like the teams that were winning games, they were running the football pretty well for the most part. I mean, they were out there handling business when they needed to in the run game for the most part.
Salts the game away, but still.
And it allows you to, it's a safer it's a safer proposition than passing when everybody's basically just daring you to run the football.
I agree. And I looked at the playoffs, you know, and it comes down to a lot of things. Like, obviously, take the points when you can take the points.
There's a lot 100%.
Of coaching decisions.
A lot of teams that left points on the field.
There was a lot of bad coaching decisions that happened this week. So, you know, the balance of that, and at the end, you need that trigger, man. You need that guy to take you down there. Like that pass freaking Caleb Williams made, man, unfortunately.
That was the game-winning touchdown.
You got to do that.
Such an incredible throw down the sideline.
There's only a few people in the world that can do that crap.
But you know why Caleb has looked so good? Because they run the football so well with Swift and Manungai.
It keeps the safeties clean, man.
It forces them to have to think more, because when you run play action, when you can run the football and you run play action, those safeties have to think for a split second.
It's like the Patriots Chargers. They knew they couldn't run. Yeah. Even they tried it and tried
they it and
tried
it.
It. And, they,
and it was a terrible game.
In that second half, they went in that locker room.
Yeah.
And they said, I don't care. We're coming. We're bringing two. We're going zero blitz. We're coming at you.
Right.
Because you ain't going to do nothing about it. Uh-huh. And they didn't do anything about it.
No.
And you know what? That Bears game, they flipped on the Packers, too. They did the same thing. I mean, the pressure was there, but it wasn't like the second half. Second half was a much different game pressure-wise.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And that's my thing is this. Because we're not in a perfect world, because we understand the nuances of what it takes to coach in this league and coach with Andy and whatnot, you need someone that's got chemistry with him and understands how to get him to do the things that maybe he doesn't really want to do. Eric Bieniemy can do that. And Eric Bieniemy now has been working in a system that I think Ben Johnson right now to me is like the leading innovator for what the league is trying, what the league should become in terms
clearly
of
didn't
offense.
Work out at UCLA for Bieniemy, didn't work out in Washington. Yeah. Ben Johnson's a different animal.
But you know, him being in Chicago, he sees what Ben does, how Ben game plans. He helps him put together the run game, which is a core part of his offense. And so to me, I think it's perfect. You get a guy in who's seen another system that works, seen a system that the Chiefs, I think, should try to incorporate more of in their offense. And, you know, you run your offense a little bit more through your running backs than you have the last few years. To me, I understand it's not sexy. And I know there's people out there that don't want to hear that because they want some fresh blood. And I get it. I'd love for them to get some fresh blood in there.
But I also
understand that, like, we got to be realistic about this situation.
Just understand the situation, the hierarchy, the dynamic, having Andy Reid here.
Yeah.
It's tough. And here's the thing with Bieniemy. He has won. So, I mean, that's out of the question. He knows how to win a Super Bowl. He's won multiple.
Yeah, and the last time this offense was truly great, he was the offensive coordinator.
And he was the guy they came to and said, do we have time to run the Wasp? Like, that was him involved in that. And I'll say this. I remember back in the first day he came with Andy Reid, I was there in St. Joe at the first practice, and I remember him barking.
He was always loud.
And people are like, who's that? And I said, that's Bieniemy.
Yeah.
And
always loud.
The drills he was doing and everything. And I started getting asked that when you do these hits and stuff. And who do you think's that next guy, head coach, who do you think it's going to be? I said, I think it's going to be Bieniemy because you can definitely know he's on the field, because when he's out there, you know he's out there. And I don't know what happened. Things stalled. I mean, seeing him from the first day on, I was like, this dude's it. And I thought it was silly the Chargers didn't hire him back in the day because he played for him.
Yeah.
And he was under Andy Reid. And not only that, it was a guy that knew everything about the Kansas City Chiefs, which they needed because they couldn't get past the Chiefs at that point. But I don't know what happened the last couple of years. Hopefully this is a good reset for Eric with Ben. But we know we can do. He's good. He knows offense like crazy. He's willing to stand up to Andy Reid, which a lot of people aren't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Nagy was willing to do that. I think Nagy was whatever you want, Andy. Like, he's a guy that he will stand up for what he believes.
What kind of coffee do
you want
this morning?
You said what?
What kind of coffee do you want this morning?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, get your own.
Hey, I got you. Hey, you want some snacks, too? I got you. I'm going over to the cafeteria.
Bieniemy's like, I don't have time for that crap, man.
Yeah, no, Bieniemy is, he's, like, that's that, the thing I love about Bieniemy is that I don't doubt for a second that if he disagrees with Andy,
he'll tell him. Or Pat. I mean, he's been in Pat's face.
And that was the thing I think a lot of people didn't like, was that he was willing to get into Pat's ass. And it's funny now because, you know, it was funny, like the last couple of years, people were complaining about how Nagy didn't really get on Pat the way that he should. It's like, you know, the guy before him that you guys wanted gone, he was willing to
do that. Take Pat out of the equation, too. Think about the last couple of years, all the drop passes.
Yeah.
And that guy coming to the sideline and dealing with them. Because they needed an ass chewing. I mean, there's plenty of guys on this team that, hey, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? I mean, they needed that. I think the best coaches in the NFL are GMs, especially when you come to the draft. I know it sounds bad, but it's the type of guy, you know, when your wife comes in the bedroom with a new dress and says, do you like this? And you say, well, I don't. But most guys are going to go, oh, yeah, baby, you look great. Deep down, they don't think that. But the guy that says, no, I don't think you do. Like, that's the, honestly, I know it sounds bad, but that's the guy you need.
And I think that it's always,
please everybody.
It's always good to have a dissenter in your organization because you need somebody that's going to present different ideas.
Do you get my reference there, though?
Because
a lot of people don't say what they truly mean.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, that's great. That's great. But the guy that says, no. I don't like that. She should have got the red one.
Like I said, I think the Chiefs need that in their organization now. Yeah. They need that. They've needed that for a while.
They don't need yes men.
That was the reason why I always had respect for Bienemy. And I was hoping that, you know, him leaving was going to lead to him getting a head coaching job, because I think a lot of people did discount the fact that he didn't call plays whenever they were interviewing him for head coaching jobs.
And that might be his role. You know, as far as, you know, head coach and running the whole thing and offensive defense.
It is what it is.
And it's okay. We mentioned, you know, Dom Capers, Norv Turner,
right.
Spags. I'd put Spags in the same care. Yeah, I know he's getting interviews with coaches. He's not going to get
it. I don't think he's going to get a coaching job.
He'll stay defensive court. That's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, he's in his mid-60s now. It's like, are you really going to hire him to be your head coach in his mid-60s?
That's who and what he is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I can be talked into it. I'm not a huge fan of it. I will say this. Like, most of these guys look around, and when the Chiefs' job comes open, it's like, whoa. Because they don't have job openings very much, man.
No.
I mean, that indeed is not rolling for the Kansas City Chiefs. They don't have openings. But now they do. And now they can take their time and find the right person where they're not, you know, pressed with everybody else grabbing guys. The Chiefs are in a fortunate position right now where they kind of, you know, wait till the guys that are going to get head coaches get them. And then get the best of the rest. And they're in that position where before, when you have to, you know, time and do Zoom interviews and then do it because you're marching your way through the playoffs, things change now. And this is their opportunity to get it right. Whether it's EB or whether it's another coordinator, it's been rare that the Kansas City Chiefs have had high-profile openings that didn't automatically go to a Matt Nagy or automatically go to a Doug Peterson. You know, this is their chance to get the right guy. And if they feel EB is that missing piece that they had before, that's fine. But again, this is a rarity where the Chiefs have a job opening like that. Because Spags, it was like, that's your guy. You're coming in here, you're your guy. But now there's guys interviewing and would want it. And you would think this would be a nice stepping stone for a lot of guys that want to go to the next level, being with an Andy Reid or a Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. My whole thing is just, I think that a lot of these guys, because of the fact that they don't get to call plays, is going to be something that's always going to hold them back for sure. Because
it depends on how much they're active. Like, if they can sit down with Andy during the week, which he does sit down with the coordinators together.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
But as long as they sit down, and I know the coordinators here, like, Bienemy has talked about it. You know, Andy would have his play sheet, and Eric was part of putting plays in. And then Eric would go home and memorize it. Like, he'd memorize the play sheet.
And he would suggest stuff.
He would
do a lot of research, too.
And a lot of times, Andy would run the stuff that EB wanted to run. So he did have influence in the offense.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
It might have been the time and play. But Andy Reid listens to coordinators. And if they really want to run a certain thing, just like, do we have time to run WASP? That was coordinators involved in that. It was Mahomes. It was Tyreek Hill involved in that. And in Andy, of course, has to give the blessing to it, but I do know that certain coordinators that get that trust level do get their opportunity to have an input in the offense, and EB certainly got to that level.
So, like I said, I definitely agree that, like, it'd be nice to get a fresh voice. I also think, though, that, like, that's just not the circumstance you're in right now.
Can you work with the younger guys that come in?
Yeah.
You know, he kind of can because he's a teacher.
Yeah.
And he's going to get in your ass.
He's going to get on you, but, like, accountability is something I think that the organization has missed on the offense.
And sometimes some of the guys they bring in, they need somebody to get in their ass a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. So Chiefs did make another coaching change. They let go of wide receiver coach Connor Embry.
Yeah, that was...
It was needed, I think.
It was very needed.
It was needed, I think. I think that we, you know, the last few years, we've kind of seen how that situation goes. And
when you don't have
good.
A 1,000-yard receiver with this quarterback and this team.
Yeah, and yeah. It was... And look, I understand, like, they've definitely... You've drafted guys who have had some issues off the field and whatnot, missed time. I think Rashee Rice would have had a 1,000-yard season this year if he would have played the whole year. But, you know, obviously that didn't happen. But I one of the things that really concerned me was when I was listening to Nate Taylor on Fesco talk about him being let go and about how you have basically, like, the players didn't really feel like they were getting coached at all. And the guys who were really like coaching them were Hopkins and Kelsey.
Kelsey, yeah.
So it's like, if that is the
situation.
Which
is good because you need that to be part of it.
You do,
but
like that cannot be the main portion of coaching.
But again, it's just a chance, again, with wide receiver coach to go along. An offensive coordinator should have a role in the wide receiver coach. Who would work best with these guys is men.
Right.
I personally prefer former player. That wants to get into coaching, that wants to be a wide receiver.
I mean, I would prefer that too, but
someone
that's
seen it and done it.
If it's someone
that.
Who is
it's not
like,
necessary, but 100% mandatory.
I think Joel Blyemeyer was the guy before him, he took over as the passing. I think he's passing or quarterbacks coach now or something. One
but
of the
there's
two.
A certain respect level, and I know Andy Reid didn't play in the NFL.
Yeah,
but when minute he got here, I remember talking to guys. You say, yeah, we respect him because of what he's done. He's been to the Super Bowl and he had that respect. But when you're Connor Embry. And you're an NFL wide receiver, there is something to respecting that guy when you come to that sideline.
I mean, you said we
he has that because he's played in the league.
Here's what I'll say though, is like Andy Reid was never a quarterback. He was an offensive lineman, but he was a quarterback's coach. So like I don't necessarily think that you have to be like a former great wide receiver or anything.
Yeah, but he had the street cred.
It is nice to
he
have
with
that.
Favre,
but
and
it
he had
is
Donovan.
Not. Yeah, but like he did that because he proved that he was good at his job.
Yeah, he had to build himself. He had to make
himself
that guy.
He had to build
himself
up. And like Embry was in a position where he could have done that. The question, though, the problem was like clearly he didn't have the leadership qualities that they were looking for.
No, you don't necessarily have to be a former player, but I do feel that respect level. Between a player and somebody that's been there and done that.
And
don't tell me EB
and
hasn't.
He has played. Like, Emory did play in college.
Like, those running backs.
He played
when they have EB as their offensive coordinator, you know they liked because he was a former running back.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, my thing, though, is like, you can win that respect without having to do that.
Yeah.
But, like, it does give you a little extra.
It takes a while to build it.
But my thing is, like, I really hope that with the next wide receiver coach hire, that they don't just say, oh, let's just promote someone who was under him. I don't want that. Bring someone from the outside. Someone, preferably, someone from a different coaching staff.
Because I like what they do.
Who has coached good wide receivers.
Yeah, because I like what they do in St. Joe, and they bring back an Antonio Pierce for a couple days, or Gruden, or something like that. Just somebody from the outside. Hey, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And Pierce made a lot of sense, too. And so did Gruden some extent, because they played the Chiefs.
I just think that they really need to get someone with a different kind of voice, someone who has not been in their organization before, someone who has experience with wide receivers coaching them, not just playing but coaching, because it's different. And that's what I would want. And you know, it'd be great if it'd be nice if they had the street cred for being like a former NFL wide receiver. What is he going to coach them how to do?
Do what I don't.
He's going to coach them to sprain his ankle every game?
I'm kidding, kidding.
I'll say this, man. They definitely need someone who's going to who has an understanding of like modern NFL, and you know, especially nowadays with like the different kind of releases you get now, and how you're going to, especially man coverage. Like, got to be someone who knows, like, hey, this is how you release against man,
beating man,
leverage,
the
understanding the leverage, things like that. Yeah, like that's got to be a big thing, because like you could definitely tell like the receivers weren't being coached that well. Especially like the last couple years.
They weren't creating separation. You watch these playoffs this past weekend, that was the main game. That was separation.
Yeah.
Even D-Rob found a way to get wide open.
Yeah.
And running games help that.
It does help. But it's that part's really frustrating, not seeing the development happen with the receivers in a way that you were hoping. So, yeah, I want to see what they can do. Hopefully they bring in the right guys. And hopefully they bring in a voice that is not within their organization.
It's like a Todd Pinkston. What the hell is he doing with running backs?
That part was weird. And then, you know, before that it was Greg Lewis, who was the running. It was like, they're both former wide receivers.
Just give me a,
why the hell are they running back?
We get
back
a
coaches?
Wide receiver running wide.
What I are mean, we doing?
I don't care if that's what it is, but you got to be damn good.
Yeah, what are we doing? Like it would have made sense if you made Todd Pinkston the receivers coach. You didn't do that.
No.
You made him the running back coach.
Maybe Terrell Owens was the coach.
I'm good. I'm good. I'm good on that. But they definitely need to get somebody. I prefer if they were to, like, maybe one of these wide receiver coaches for one of these fired coaches. Go poach their receivers coach. Get a different voice in there. Someone who's got some experience, you know? I don't know who the wide receiver coach is for Mike McDaniel in Miami. Maybe get him, or maybe get the assistant receivers coach there or something, you know?
Well, here's the name from Blast of the Past, Deshaun Jackson.
Is he coaches right now? Yeah, he does. You know what?
Woodrow Wilson High School. He's a high school coach. He's an offensive coordinator, and he's at Delaware State right now. But,
yeah, he's at I was about to say, I know.
But
he's
it's a guy
college.
That played for Andy Reid, and a guy that certainly knows how to use the speed as a weapon.
He understands his system. Yeah. He was a smaller guy.
And don't forget, Chip Kelly went from head coach to coordinator. So you can't do it. But Sean Jackson knows how to use his size and speed as an advantage.
Because he was a smaller guy. He was Xavier Worthy size. He was actually a little smaller than Xavier Worthy.
He's a coach now, I believe, at Delaware State, but he's in the coaching.
Yeah, he's the head coach at Delaware State.
I'm just saying, man, it's just.
I'm cool with that.
You're an NFL team. Somebody I'd look at.
I'm cool with that. Yeah, no, I like that idea. Like, he does coach, and yeah, no, I'd be cool with that. And I'm sure he would jump at the chance to be a position coach in the NFL.
Imagine what he could do with Worthy.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, he could help guys like Worthy who are smaller and help him understand the nuances.
Help bigger guys, too.
Deshaun was great at man, you know, beating mm-hmm. man coverage, great at getting open down the field.
Speed and, game.
You know, you could definitely get something out of this. So I like that idea. But they need somebody who has a lot more experience than what
because
Embry
Deshaun's
had.
The type of guy that didn't want to probably stop there. I mean, the guy is
he's
so
getting
a
start.
If you're a wide receiver coach, you elevate yourself to offensive coordinator at some point, and then you get the head coaching interviews,
right?
But get your foot in the door in the National Football League, and, you know, being a guy that clearly has that respect level for Andy, and it goes both ways, because I do believe they're still friends.
Yeah, no, they're cool. As far as I know, they're still cool. I mean, I definitely think that would be if they decided to bring him in, I'd love that. I'd be all for that. So. You sent me an article, Bleacher Report. They did a redraft of round one from last year.
Usually you see this from a couple years ago. But yeah, it's kind of fun, though, looking at last year.
A lot of times we do see them the next year. We do see that the next
year.
Man. So here are the highlights from this redraft. There's actually a couple Chiefs on this list here. First three picks, three quarterbacks. You got Jackson Dart, number one overall, to Tennessee. I disagree with that. I would take Cam Ward over Jackson Dart, but Cam Ward was number two to Cleveland. And then number three to New Orleans was Tyler Shuck, who is their quarterback anyways. Then with the sixth overall pick, you've got the Las Vegas Raiders taking wide receiver Ted Earl McMillan, which makes a ton of sense.
That's a guy I wish was in Kansas City.
Yeah, he'd be awesome if he was here. At eighth overall, you have Carolina taking tight end Tyler Warren, which, again, would be a really nice option.
I know Colston looked great the other night. He really did. Honestly, he looked great. I still like Tyler Warren better.
Me too. I like him better. I think he's a better athlete. But, yeah, Colston Lovin looked awesome on Saturday.
And let's be honest, the production did come down when they were trotting down 44-year-old quarterbacks.
Yeah. In the 12th round, with the 12th overall pick, Cleveland taking Carson Schwesinger, the linebacker from UCLA, who had an awesome year this past season. Was he second team All-Pro this year? I think he was second team All-Pro, and I think he's the favorite to win Defensive Rookie of the Year.
He was drafted in the
second round, I believe.
Second round.
I think it was second round.
But he was a stud.
Yeah, I think
that's why that defense remained good.
13th overall, they've got Nick Emmanuel, the safety, who has been awesome for Seattle this year. he's been really great this year, and they got Nick Emmanuel there at pick 16, Arizona. right tackle Armon Membu, which they actually had Kelvin Banks above him, and they had Will Campbell above him. But I think Armon Membu's been the best tackle in this class. Armon Membu's been awesome for the Jets.
A lot of people, that was going to play guard, and he wouldn't still be a tackle. And
he's a right tackle for the Jets. He's been awesome for them. And to me, I think the Raiders should have taken him instead of taking Ashton Jeanty. So I think that was a big miss there. 19, Tampa Bay, Emeka Ebuka, who's been awesome. He's been one of their best receivers this year. Number 20 for Denver, cornerback Noel Williams, your guy for the Chiefs.
Now, this is a value jump. This is third round, the first round.
Right,
this
late
is,
third round.
This is stuff you want to see as a GM.
This is pick, what was it, 86, I think? Because they traded up to get him.
They gave him the fourth round pick that they got for Joe Tooney. The Chiefs did for Noel Williams.
Yeah, so this would be big for them.
This is big for GM when you see things like this. You understand their value because you know, you're thinking, okay, can you get it? Because look at the rest of these picks. Creed Humphrey, he was a second round pick. Clearly, he's a first round. Trey Smith, sixth round. That's first round pick at this point. Nick Bolton, second rounder. He'd probably go in the first at this point. So the key, L'Jarius Sneed was the fourth round. You know, that guy played with first round ability towards the end there with the Chiefs. And certainly, Noel Williams at 20 would be absolutely huge.
Pick 21, Pittsburgh, Luther Burden, wide receiver from Mizzou. He'd be
big
really
fan
interested.
Of Luther.
Man, he looked really good on Saturday.
I know he was one of the guys that I would mock for the Chiefs.
One of the guys we really wanted.
Yeah,
we wanted him
guys.
Above Josh Simmons there at pick 32. So
really like Luther.
Yeah, for the Chargers at 22, Travion Henderson, the running back from Ohio State. I actually disagree with this. I think they picked right with Hampton. It took a while for Henderson to really get going. I think Hampton showed it a lot earlier than Henderson.
Hampton's
did.
Tough because of the injuries, the ankle.
Yeah, I mean, but that's an injury.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. You can't really.
Yeah.
Because of the injury, you can't really, you know, identify it. Hey, they made a mistake. Although I wouldn't have drafted a running back from the Chargers.
I wouldn't have either. But like in this scenario, if I had Henderson or Hampton, I would take Hampton. Pick 24, Minnesota, Ashton Jeanty, the running back from Boise State.
So you like Henderson over Jeanty?
Yeah, no, I don't. Okay. I would take Jeanty over Henderson. Pick 25, Houston, left tackle Josh Simmons, which, again, makes sense.
They moved him up seven spots.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, I to be honest, probably would move him above Kelvin Banks or Will Campbell, too. I think he's been the second best tackle in this class behind Armon Membu. 26 for the Rams, tight end Harold Fannin Jr., who
played a lot better than people thought he would.
Yeah, he's definitely, because I'll say the senior.
His numbers
bowl,
weren't great at the combine, were
senior,
they?
It was the combine, it was also the senior.
The 40
bowl
was kind of slow with Harold.
40
wasn't it?
Was like a four, it was like high 4.6s.
But he caught over 100 passes last year at Bowling Green.
Right, yeah, he was high volume tight end there, and he's been the best receiver. He was the best receiver for the Browns this year. Yep. So, but certainly you watch the tape, it looked good. But, yeah, at the Senior Bowl, he didn't really stand out a whole lot. And then, at the Combine, he ran pretty slow at the 40. So that really kind of hurt him, I thought. Fans look good. And then pick 31 for the Chiefs. Wide receiver Chimere Dike from the University of Florida, my Gators. Would not take him here in the first round, even after a redraft. But he is definitely, a receiver that could be very special in the league for sure. Never really quite hit that potential when he was at Florida, but you could see the talent. So let's get to our college football playoff recap for the semifinal round. Starting off with the first game, the Thursday night matchup between Miami and Ole Miss. Miami won this game 31-27. Another very tightly contested game here. Miami's defense did not play as well as they had the week before against Ohio State, but they still played pretty well overall when they needed to. And were able to get the stops that they needed to. Carson Beck, 268 yards, two touchdowns. He also had a pick and he had a fumble, but you know they didn't lose that fumble. Mark Fletcher, though, had a game. 22 carries, 133 yards. Looked really good out there.
He's turned a lot of heads because that stiff arm is nasty. He might be the toughest running back in college football the way he runs.
He's huge.
And the thing is, he is draft eligible.
He is draft eligible,
but he loves the U.
Come out that he was going to stay at the U.
It doesn't mean that's locked solid. I mean,
it's not locked.
If they get in his head and like, Mark, He's not going the first round. That's the thing.
He's probably a day two pick at the highest.
Yeah, but people got this head and like, dude, you need to be going to the NFL. But he already made that declaration early December that he was going back to you. And keep this in mind. He's a different cat. He's extremely loyal. So when he says something, that's what he's doing.
You know what's funny? As you say that, we'll get to more of this in a little bit. He ain't the only one from this class that could probably go pretty decently high that's deciding to come back.
Neil is changing the ball game, Chris.
Yeah. Mark Fletcher, you know, a lot of people liked him after that, after the two playoff games.
He spotlighted himself. He's money-making.
He's definitely making himself some money. But, as far as we know right now, he is going to stay at Miami for the 26th
season. And Malachi Toney, people.
He's a true freshman.
In a couple years.
Freshman.
Oh, God. I mean, this guy is so talented, man.
I'll tell you this.
For like, a three-star on a 247 and a four on three.
Yeah,
guys. The 5'11".
The 27 and 28 receiver classes are going to be so good.
Yeah, he'd be 28. So
the 28 class is going to, like, I'm telling you this right now, Florida, they got two guys who could be first round picks there with Trey Brown and with Dallas Wilson, 4-star in Trey, 5-star in Dallas Wilson. They got Eric Singleton from Auburn this past weekend as well. He transferred over there. He's a guy that could be a day one pick.
But I think a lot of people are looking at Miami because of that defense.
Yeah.
And I will remind people, Indiana's defense actually ranked higher than Miami.
Miami's defense, though, has the splashier names because of the pass rush.
But as far as standouts in their defense that have looked so good in the playoffs so far, Mesidor got banged up in this game.
He did.
He didn't have his best game. Reuben Bain didn't do anything.
He didn't do a whole lot until later in the game.
And Jacoby Thomas still led him in tackles. This guy's been all over the place. And as far as three separate incidents, he was used for a blitz. He passed the defender and he dropped an interception, which he usually has really good hands. Yeah. But you don't always ask your defensive backs to do that. He does have five picks on the year, but I know that's kind of a spotlight for Miami for good reason, the defensive players.
For Ole Miss, Trinette Chambliss, 277 passing yards and a passing touchdown. We talked about this last week, about how it was likely he was going to be back for the 26th season because his team had come out and said that he was going to apply for a sixth year of eligibility so he can come back next season. That's been denied, reportedly. Now, they can still appeal that decision, so we don't know for certain if he is a lock for the draft. We will see if he does win his appeal, but as of right now, he is not eligible for another year at Ole Miss, and so if that were the case, he would most likely be the third quarterback in the 26th
draft. It would
be
a six-year. His team did feel this was going to happen. Like, they've come out, like, they did feel it would be good tonight.
Oh, yeah, they've been recruiting quarterbacks in the transfer portal this entire time.
Like, Trinity Chambliss, you know, Tom Mars and his representation, they prepped him that you're probably going to get denied the first time.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to retry it, but it's going to be in the state of Mississippi.
Yeah,
the chances of him coming back are pretty good now.
We say that, but we don't know.
Yeah, if they're Ole Miss fans.
Here's what I'll say, though. They have been recruiting other quarterbacks. Because I know, like, there was talk that DJ Lagway was, you know, for sure for Baylor. But word came out late last week that he's talking to Ole Miss now.
That's a big, you know, what are we doing? Like, Michigan, they've loaded up with two good quarterbacks in Colorado State. And they got Underwood still. But, so you're sitting there watching Chambliss, which they really need to get this thing going so that they can either, you know, dabble in the portal. Which I know Ty Simpson's been the guy that Ole Miss has been looking at if Chambliss does go.
Yeah, like I said, I think that Ole Miss is not they're not that confident that he's going to be able to come back because they're out here recruiting other quarterbacks to be their starters. So, Chambliss, you know, did have some errant throws. Did have some potential picks that he
Miami dropped about four of them.
Yeah, but you know, overall, I still think like he put some good tape out there for the most part. His receivers, Dejon Stribling, 5 catches for 77 yards. Trey Wallace, 4 catches for 40 yards. Not the best defensive game overall, but offensively, you know, I think there were some good things out there. Carson Beck also, besides the turnovers, he had multiple would-be turnovers that didn't really look that good.
And Chamberlain's sitting there saying, this dude's on 7 years?
Yeah, I know. then you have the other matchup, the Friday night matchup. We were on the air for this matchup on After Hours. Oregon, Indiana. Indiana beat that ass 56-22. This game was done at halftime. Dante Moore.
Done on a second play or first play.
Yeah, I mean, the first play was a pick six from Dante Moore. He had 285 touchdown in the aforementioned pick six. On Indiana sideline, Fernando Mendoza, he managed the hell out of this game. 177 yards, five touchdowns, two fumbles, didn't lose either.
Three Roman, incompletions, five touchdowns. This is what he does.
Yeah, he just doesn't make mistakes very much, and he's not going to put up eye-popping stats, but he will not make mistakes.
They're kind of Drake May-ish numbers, to be honest with you, except for the running.
I don't know if
Drake May's a better runner.
That's not Drake May numbers.
So what? Think about
that. Those are Alex Smith numbers.
Well, the thing about it is he's really accurate. I mean, he's had an 85% completion,
right? But
in a record straight,
Drake May's putting well over 200 out.
Well, like, no, what I'm saying
Mendoza's putting out a lot of sub 200 passing games.
Drake May in his career, including this whole season and 13 games last year, has one game over 300 yards.
Right.
But he's extremely accurate in the completion percentage. Right. With Mendoza, he's not going to light you up with 300, 400 yards at this point.
He's not even going to light you up with 200 that often.
But the bottom line is, he's very accurate in what he does.
Yeah, my thing though is, like, I think Alex Smith would be a much better comparison.
I would, but Alex runs more. I'll have a lot more. Mendoza doesn't run.
Yeah, but as a passer, he's very Alex Smith like. Like, not going to take a lot of risk. He's going to put his guys in a good position to make a play, but he's not going to take a lot of risk, and he's not going to turn the ball over. And so he's, like I said, I just think he's a game manager, and he's done a really good job at managing.
These numbers would dictate that.
Roman Hemby, 17 carries, 53 yards. His receiving core, I mean, he was serving up touchdowns to his receivers.
As far as Hemby's concerned, one guy that's not getting much run is Raylon Black.
Yeah.
Who came close to 900 yards this year, over 5 yards a carry. He's been getting the ball a lot for Indiana down the stretch.
If we're being honest, neither is Roman Hemby either.
No, I know. And Hemby,
neither of those guys is getting a lot of run right
Hemby's
now.
Hemby's showing up a little bit on charts, though, to run. Black's not. And no. Black came over, well, he was hampered with injuries and stuff last year and some inconsistencies, but he had, a couple hundred yards, 250 yards rushing last year, but he has emerged for Indiana down the stretch, and I've been impressed with this kid because he's been in crucial situations, right? And he's 5'11".
He was better than Hemby in this game.
He's 5'11", about 210 pounds, mm-hmm. somewhere like that, and it's one of those guys that maybe, later rounds, maybe undrafted.
Right.
Depends on what he does at the combine, the number he's put up. But keep an eye on this guy, man, because, again, he went from James Madison with Cignetti.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think that either him or Hemby are getting a lot of run because, I don't think either of them are great running backs, but I think they can be a good committee guy.
They're good blockers and tough.
Yeah. I don't think either of them are going to be great running backs in the league. But yeah, I mean, they'll be committee guys. They'll, be a backup. They'll both be backups somewhere, I think. And, they can contribute to teams. Elijah Surratt, 75 yards and two touchdowns in this game.
He's crazy.
Just showed off like the athleticism, the big body he's got. I mean, look, that was big for him. Omar Cooper Jr., 17 yards and a touchdown. EJ Williams, 13 yards and a touchdown.
They still use him.
Yeah, I mean, one guy that did stand out, cornerback D'Angelo Pons, smaller corner, probably going to be a slot guy at the NFL level. He's like 5'9", 170 pounds or so, but he's gotten a lot of hype here. He had a pick six. He was the one that got the pick six on the opening play for Indiana.
They were played against an Oregon defense that can show some saltiness. I mean, that first game against James Madison, they weren't great. They gave over 500 yards, but they allowed 215 to Texas Tech. I mean, it was a different defense, and they were getting some momentum, right? So Indiana doing this thing to them, what they did to Oregon, pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, I mean, they basically just marched down the field against them every time. Now, they got a lot of short field situations, but still marched right down the field and was able to score. Now this is an interesting situation. You brought up Dylan Raiola, former Nebraska quarterback, weirdo who pretends to be Patrick Mahomes
with the four high schools,
level.
By the way,
just really weird. He's transferring to Oregon. Oregon didn't get Sam Leavitt. Sam Leavitt is committed to LSU, and so you've got Dylan Raiola, who there was word that Louisville was going to be the spot for him.
I saw this, Chris. The thing is, Dylan wants to play. I mean, that's why he went to four high school. He wants to play, right?
Yeah.
And he fancies himself as a starter. And people say, well, he didn't want to sit back. And he's not going to transfer anywhere to sit for a year. He's not going to. So when he makes that commitment to Oregon, I'm sitting there going, well, Dante Moore is going, and when you're starting to get run about being top five and top ten,
right.
Even though I think it'd be better for him to go back, but you and I
teams think that too. But there's a lot of teams that think that too.
Yeah. And you and I are looking at this quarterback class, and we don't particularly like it. And if you're standing out amongst this quarterback class, take your money, man. If you can be first round, you go do it. But when Dylan signed with Oregon, I'm like, Dante's gone, man. Oh, I can't see Dante in the portal.
100%. Like, yeah, as soon as that happened, that was all the confirmation that I think we needed to know that Dillard Raiola is going to be the starter next
Chiefs
year.
Chiefs need him because I think there's only going to be two quarterbacks taken before.
Which is fine because the Chiefs are picking at nine. So it's not as bad.
Dante would be the two guys.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I agree with you. I think with that situation, we know that Dante Moore is almost assuredly going to be entering the draft. And, you know, we talked about this on Friday. You kind of have to. If you're getting a second overall grade or maybe even a number one overall grade from some people, when some people think you're the best quarterback in this draft class just from a sheer talent standpoint, which I think he is, mountains above Mendoza. I don't think you can afford to not go.
You don't want to go in next year with Leavitt and Hoover and all these guys and
not even
Arch Manning.
Arch.
You don't want that. And not only that, you can take a step back, man. Like if Oregon takes a step back.
You got receivers that are probably going to – like you've got Jeremiah Smith that could go top five.
You got to strike when that iron's hot, man. Yeah. When that fire's burning, that's when you jump.
He ain't – I don't think he's going to be a top – I don't think he would be a top five quarterback in next year's class.
We see coaches sit and wait and cherry pick their opportunities. Then they'd pass him by. And it's – you should have jumped on your opportunity.
Yeah, I always say this like because of the Matt Barkley situation.
Yeah.
Former USC starting quarterback was, I mean, almost guaranteed number one overall in 2013. He decided to stay, came back to USC. 2014, he was a fourth round pick. So, actually, it was 2012 into 2013. 2013, he ended up being a fourth round pick that year.
I look at a guy like Venables is doing a good job at Oklahoma and stuff, but he sat and waited and waited, and it worked out for him.
Found the right job. Because he could have jumped at a lot of other jobs.
He could have. He really could have. He had many opportunities to do that.
And he was smart, and now he's in a position where he's at Oklahoma.
And he was with the program and kept winning.
Yeah, and he's done a good job there at Oklahoma. I always think this is like, look, if you get an opportunity like that where you can go top five, you got to take it. Because you don't know what's going to happen with injuries and
none's
all that.
Guaranteed.
Take it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
You'd be Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah. I mean,
it was looked at as upon the one or two quarterback this year coming into the season. They clearly left much differently, but he was viewed entirely different. Matter of fact, Nussmeier might have been drafted higher last year.
Maybe. I mean,
he
might have been a second round pick last year.
He might have cost himself some rounds this year.
I don't blame Nussmeier for coming back because he was like a second day guy. He was probably a second day guy at best. And a lot of people thought he was going to, I thought he was going to be the top quarterback in his class.
But if you have the wrong coach, the wrong system. Crap
he also happen. Wasn't good, but yeah, like it. You just don't know. So in this situation, you just got to take it in that scenario. So and then that leaves the question about Ty Simpson. Ty Simpson, what is he going to do? I personally think that Ty Simpson should come back for another year. I think he should go transfer somewhere else.
It depends on the voices he gets, which all have people in their ears seeing the first round and all that.
I don't think he's a first round pick.
Yeah, I really don't either, unless. The quarterbacks, teams are so starved for quarterbacks, and they are. But when you have Yahoo put it out here, four programs in the Power Four offering money, three SEC schools offered at least $4 million, another program as high as $6.5
million. He's not going to make that kind of money this year. I don't think he's going to be a first-round pick this year.
That's tempting, man, to hit that portal when that kind of cash is being floated out your way. Here's the deal. Do you want to take the chance, or are you going to be Will Levis? Because Will Levis thought he was going to be first round.
He did.
He was on the next play out in Kansas City when the draft was here.
He was done. He flew out of it. As soon as Thursday night was concluded, he was out of town.
But he got advice, and he got wrong information from teams, because Tennessee was all up about him, and they waited till the second round for him. But again, if you're teetering at the end of the first round, you don't know, man.
Don't know. If you're a quarterback teetering at the end of the first round,
because they might just wait on your ass.
Go back. Go back, man. If you're not a surefire top 10 pick, top 15 pick, just go back. The money's better anyways. And you know what? You have a better opportunity.
That's all guaranteed.
It's all guaranteed. You have a better opportunity to then improve your stock and try to get top 10, top 5.
Which you could. Get in the right system.
I don't think he will, but I do think it would be better for him to go back.
I mean, I look at
and go to a different transfer.
I look at where he was this year. It's weird that Ryan Williams didn't have a great year, to be honest with you, with him at Alabama.
Yeah.
But Alabama was so bad running the football, that literally was him carrying that team. And they didn't win a playoff game.
Yeah.
That offense was all about him. And obviously he'll hit the portal now. I don't think unless Alabama's one of these schools offering money, I don't think they are.
They shouldn't do that.
I think Tennessee, Ole Miss were some of the names I heard.
Maybe. I can see Ole Miss.
I think Miami's going to make
Tennessee another, doesn't make any sense.
I think Miami's going to make another big dash. They brought in Sam Levitt for a visit and everything.
Oh, man.
This is what they've been doing. I'd love
to see him in Miami.
This is what they do with Cam Ward and Carson Beck, and they just keep churning it.
So, getting two returning players. I alluded to this earlier. I texted you about this on Saturday. This 2026 class is losing really good talent.
It is.
A ton of really good talent. There's a lot of really good players who, instead of entering the draft, are entering the portal.
Like our guy, Justice Haynes.
Dude, that broke my heart, man. That came across on Friday. It broke my heart. Justice Haynes, running back from Michigan. My favorite running back in this draft class.
All right, you have to deal with my hurting now.
Is going to be transferring. And I think the word out there right now is Georgia Tech. We'll see.
Well, now you're going to be dealing with Mark Fletcher and Brett Hardy. And
yeah, like I said, he's awesome. He's like I said, he could be the best. He could be one of the best running backs in next year's class. Absolutely. So
I'm kind of surprised he's not staying.
Maybe he didn't really like their system there. You know, maybe he didn't like what they were doing there. Their offense really wasn't that great at Michigan this past year. So, other names that have decided to stay. Obviously, Arch Manning announced that he was going to stay back in December.
Grandpa was right.
Yep. Which, you know, I think we all knew at the beginning of the year. After that Ohio State game at the beginning of the year, I was like, yeah, he should stay.
I'd imagine Peyton and Eli had a nice talk with their nephew.
Hey, you don't want to go to the Jets, bro. Yeah. You don't want to go to the Raiders. So, hey, man,
I'm sure their connections are quite deep.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we already know what happened with Arch and Eli back in 2004.
I imagine that.
Eli pouted his way to New York.
There's no question he has the greatest set of uncles in college football.
Oh, yeah, no. They will do whatever they can to maneuver him away from a bad situation. For Oregon, Mattia Uiagalelei, the edge rusher for them, he's staying. Amari Washington, their defensive tackle, he's staying.
Huge.
Couple receivers from Auburn, Cam Coleman, who was like the number five player in the portal, he's transferring to Texas. Eric Singleton Jr., who was their best receiver this past year, transferring to Florida. Trey Wilson, Florida wide receiver, transferring to LSU. Jaden Maiava is staying at USC. They actually had a true freshman quarterback who entered the portal because Maiava decided to stay at
USC. It's one thing Lincoln Riley could do is he does develop quarterbacks.
He does. He does do a good job of it, and Maiava, I think, has some talent. He kind of reminds me of Jordan Love a little bit. Sam Levitt, who was a guy that we talked about at the beginning of the year, is maybe a dark horse first-round pick. Didn't quite pan out on the field, but you know, definitely one of the most coveted, maybe the most coveted
quarterback. Had some big visits. He was sitting at the court side with Lane at LSU.
He was at
Tennessee.
And
that's when DeMond Williams, which is really weird. We should mention that DeMond Williams, who signed a contract.
Signed a contract with Washington. He was Washington's starting quarterback.
A week later, he's like, I'm gone.
Yeah, he entered the portal a week later.
And then he got invited. Hey, I'm coming back.
Well, because they threatened to sue him.
And then Sam Levitt sitting next to Lane Kiffin, and all of a sudden things changed.
It was because DeMond, I think originally DeMond was the guy they were going for. And then when that
didn't
happen.
He committed to Lane at Ole Miss.
You said what?
He committed to Lane at Ole Miss back in the day.
Yeah, so, Levitt ends up transferring to LSU. So they got, you know, who a lot of people thought was the best quarterback in this class. Damon Wilson entered the portal, edge rusher from Mizzou. Jace Brown, the wide receiver from K-State.
He's good.
He committed. I can't remember where. I think it was LSU. I think he committed to LSU. Let's see, Byron Brown from USF, he committed to Auburn, so he followed his coach, Alex Galesh. Jackson Arnold's in the portal. Drew Mestemaker, he is transferred from North Texas to Oklahoma State. Austin Romaine, one of the best linebackers in the nation this past year from Kansas State, He transferred. I cannot remember where. May have been Cal or Wisconsin. One of those schools. But he transferred. Ian Strong, a guy who a lot of people thought could be a day two wide receiver, bigger guy. He transferred.
Did he transfer?
Yeah, Ian Strong transferred. I want to say
Austin Romaine.
Austin Romaine. Yeah, he entered the portal. I'm pretty sure he committed.
Still have him at Kansas State, but
yeah, I saw something where he committed to transfer somewhere else. Rocco Becht, the Iowa State quarterback, transferred to Penn State. Followed his coach.
He had like 15 guys that left Iowa State.
Oh yeah, they're now it's the Penn State Cyclones. Running back Mekhi Hughes from Oregon.
Texas Tech is what they say with Romaine.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So it's Texas. I knew it was somebody in red. Romaine transferred
in cash.
You said what?
In cash.
Oh, they got a lot of cash. They got Texas Tech as number one portal class. Yeah. Right in front of Indiana,
which is awesome. Yeah. Which is fine. That's the rules. So they're taking advantage of it. They're doing what they're doing.
You gotta do. If you're not recruiting like that, then you gotta get them in the portal.
They're a player now.
So just for those expectations, there, the portal class is really hurting the 2026 draft class. So just be mindful of that. This 2026 draft class probably not going to be as strong on the third day of it. Big names from the Senior Bowl invites: Dalen Everett, the corner from Georgia; Jacoby Lane, the wide receiver from USC. I also think Mekhi Lemon will be there. Casey Concepcion, the A&M wide receiver.
Brennan Thompson, still in the watch.
Brennan Thompson will be there. Yep. You've got Garrett Nussmeier, LSU quarterback, will be there. Kevin Coleman Jr., your guy from Mizzou, will be there. You got Max Llewellyn, the edge rusher from Iowa. R. Mason Thomas from Oklahoma. Cassius Howell, edge rusher from A&M. Let's see. You have Gabe Akis, edge rusher from Illinois. David Bailey, defensive tackle from Texas Tech. Edge rusher from Texas Tech. His teammate Lee Hunter, the defensive tackle, will also be there as well. So Elijah Surratt will be there, wide receiver from Iowa State. You've got Nick Singleton Jr. and Katron Allen, the running backs for Penn State. Romello Height, the linebacker/edge rusher from Texas Tech. Jonah Coleman, running back from Washington.
It's loaded.
Loaded.
Jeremy, I actually like the Senior Bowl.
Jeremy Bernard.
It's the week before the Super Bowl.
Yep. Will Lee III, the corner, will be there. Let's see. Denai Dennis Sutton, edge rusher, Penn State. Zane Durant, defensive tackle, Penn State. And then you also have Sawyer Robertson, the quarterback from Baylor. And Michael Trigg, his teammate, the tight end, will be there as well. So Zion Young from Mizzou, edge rusher, will also be there as well. So the Senior Bowl practice is coming up in a couple weeks now.
Yeah, Zion was our pick in the second round.
So. He was. So we're really, really interesting really, really interesting Senior Bowl options. I'm really excited about Senior Bowl practice, especially with the edge rushers, especially with the receivers.
Even the East-West Shrine Game is going to be fun this year.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of talent's going there.
Yeah, I need to look up the list for the Shrine Bowl as well.
Jim Nagy, no longer part of the Senior Bowl.
Right, yeah.
So
there's a lot of really good talent that'll be there for the Senior Bowl and Shrine Bowl practices. So we're going to have you updated on those. Next week, we'll give you a little preview of guys to look out for in the national – to be honest, there's no sense in us really doing that because the national championship is going to be that night after we record. So next week we'll have you updated on any transfers, any players that have decided to forego any extra seasons and enter the draft. And, we'll also probably give you guys a mock draft roundup as now the Chiefs locked into their top 10 pick. Let's see what the rest of the nation, what the rest of the NFL draft media thinks the Chiefs will go.
I don't think they had pick 9 last time we did it, did we? Or did they?
Last time we did 11. It, I think we did it, it was 11 or 12.
Okay.
So I want to see what the other mock drafters are saying for the Chiefs there. I have taken a peek some. I've seen a lot of Kenyon Sadiqs, a lot of Jeremiah Loves. We'll do a mock draft roundup next week and get you updated on where a lot of people think the Chiefs are going to be going in the draft in what is now 3 months away, a little bit over 3 months away. So I'm excited about this draft season here. Pretty soon, we're going to start putting together our game plan for doing live shows at night from 6 to 9 on 96.5 The Fan. So we appreciate the support you guys give us. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. I am at Cerro60, at CeroTo60. Bink is at Three Guys in a Garage on Twitter. So make sure you follow us. You know, we're obviously going to talk a lot of draft throughout this process here. And on top of that, we're going to be making sure we're going to be following the pre-draft process for the players in the Senior Bowl, obviously a national championship next week. So keep it locked in with us. We appreciate the support you guys give us. Make sure you download, subscribe, give us 5 stars on whatever platform. For Jay Binkley, I'm Kristen Ocero, and this has been Character Concerns.